You are listening to The Scroll, an audiobook about Ecclesiastes written and read by Vance Neudorf, Chapter 15, Part 2. As Kohelet watched the market return to its feast preparations, he found himself quietly reciting from the book of Proverbs. Wisdom calls aloud in the street, and in the market she raises her voice. How long, you simple ones, will you love simplicity? How long will you mockers delight in mocking, and you fools hate knowledge? I called, and you refused to listen. I stretched out my hand, but you didn't pay attention. Because you have ignored all my counsel and did not heed my rebuke, I will laugh at your disaster, and I will mock when your calamity overtakes you. You will call on me, but I will not answer. You will seek me diligently, but will not find me. For the waywardness of the simple will kill them, and the complacency of fools will destroy them. But whoever listens to me will dwell securely and be at ease without fear of harm. Everyone wanted to live at ease without fear of harm, but very few would embrace the discipline of seeking wisdom. Instead, they would take select phrases from ancient texts and then weave them together into a system of belief. Quotes that promised hope and good intentions for their lives were repeated over and over to keep evil at bay. They believed that if they kept repeating a phrase, it would come true, as if wisdom were a magical incantation and not a principle to live by. Yet wisdom's opening line rebuked people for their love of simplicity, for embracing a basic system of belief that answered all the complexities of life with simple platitudes. In the market below, a few people were talking and pointing his way. Kohelet retreated back into the shadows of his room. No doubt today's gossip would include chatter about the possibility that he was losing his mind in his old age. He should have known better. For years he'd been quietly teaching these same concepts at the well. There was no reason to think it would get through to the people just because he shouted it from his window. The door opened and Eli strode into the room, a broad smile on his face. "It is good to see you have your energy back. Esther says it is because of her miracle porridge. She is going to make it for you every day." He laughed. "You may like it now, but I can tell you from experience that in a few weeks you may find it a little less enjoyable." Eli stood beside him and put his hands on Kohelet's shoulders. "It is good to see you are still with us, my friend. For a while I did not think you would make it." "Oh, I've never been that sick in all my life. Old age has definitely weakened my body." "It was the stress of dealing with Caleb. At least that's what the healer said." "What happened with Caleb? Did he sell the bird?" Eli stepped to the window across from Caleb's apartment. "I have seen a light in his room a few times, but no one has seen much of him. The healer told people he blinded your bird, and now everyone is angry with him. You're not the only one who enjoyed that song every morning." "She hasn't sung again?" "I think he may have sold her, for he has managed to buy himself enough food and wine to stay indoors for a long while." Eli turned away from the window and leaned back against the ledge. "I see you are writing again." "Yes, I am feeling better. My mind is sharper, and recent events fit well with some of my teachings. Too well."
"You should read it to me. I have some time. A few of the younger men are helping to set up my booth, because it needs to be even larger this year."
Kohelet leaned over the scroll. "Yet I also observe that the race is not always to the swift, nor the battle to the strong, nor does food always come to the wise, wealth to the brilliant, or success to the educated, for time and chance happen to us all. No one knows what tomorrow will reveal. As fish are caught in a cruel net, or birds are captured in a snare, so people are trapped by terrible times that fall unexpectedly upon them." Eli's beard swayed as he nodded. "I have heard you say that proverb many times, but it makes more sense now." "Of all the wisdom I have sought to teach people, this point is one of the most hotly debated. Everyone wants to see their lives as being continually guided by a greater purpose and intention. No one likes the idea of a world where time and chance are at play. The thought that their lives are subject to the random vicissitudes of a broken creation is very difficult to accept." Eli grunted his agreement.
"And they find the fact that it was God who broke the world even more abhorrent. They think there is no point in serving God if it does not guarantee you a better life than others who do not. If bad times can fall on anyone at any time, then what's the point of it all?"
Kohelet leaned back in his chair and smiled. He loved discussing these concepts with Eli. His friend waved his hands in his air and went on.
Then there are those who waste all their days interpreting the time and chance events that come their way. They try to prove that God has a detailed personal plan for their lives. The good things are indications of God's blessings. The negative things are punishment for something they or one of their family members has done wrong. Kohelet nodded. And because human knowledge is limited, any person who can remotely substantiate their claim to know God's plan for others can set themselves up to interpret the signs. If time and chance work in their favor, the masses will turn to these prophets for answers like the flowers of the field following the sun. Eli's beard swayed with deep nods. Their followers multiply along with the belief that their leader has all the answers that the world needs. Kohelet stood up quickly. God planted thorns and thistles, and by doing so created time and chance. In response, humans create and define a system of religion to fill the cracks between time and chance. He looked at Eli. So in a strange sense, religion becomes the worship of time and chance. When good things come your way, you take it as a sign God is being happy with you, and when bad things happen, you must discover why God is displeased. And there is always a religious leader of one type or another on hand to tell you what God is thinking. Eli laughed and his eyes sparkled. Now your thoughts are getting ahead of me. I will have to mull that one over for a while. Kohelet returned to his chair. When I look out my window, I see a world full of disasters, crime, wars, and a constant stream of negative events that keep people in continual fear. But time and chance also apply to good days, and times of relative peace are wasted and ruined by debilitating fears of what might come next. Eli cocked his head and frowned. You have never fully explained why you think God had to curse the earth. Kohelet tipped his chair back and looked up at the ceiling. I look at it this way. God created mankind in his image, and that means we are powerfully creative beings. Not at all to the extent that God is, but we have great ingenuity and potential. That potential is warped by the acquisition of the knowledge of both good and evil, and for now we know how to use the power against each other. Eli interrupted. Eve blames the serpent, Adam blames Eve, and then he puts the blame on God for ruining his perfect world by putting her in it. Kohelet looked back at Eli. So if people were given free rein to exercise their knowledge of both good and evil, then evil would eventually destroy all the goodness that still flows in God's creation. God puts thorns, thistles, and death in place to keep evil from spreading unchecked. Eli pointed at Kohelet's scroll. And that is why wisdom is needed. In a perfect world, there is no need for practical understanding of how to work through the twisted maze created by the knowledge of good and evil. No requirement to work within the realities of time and chance. Kohelet smiled at his friend. I like the way you put that. We seek knowledge, but it takes wisdom to navigate through life and decide on the best course of action. Wisdom must be sought out, and when you find it, you must listen carefully. He picked up the scroll. I noted an example of wisdom's effects in such a time. A powerful king besieged a small city. Within the walls lived a poor man who could have saved the city by his wisdom, but no one listened to him. His wisdom was better than strength, but that man's advice was not heeded. Although the quiet words of the wise are far better than the shouts of a foolish king, and wisdom is more powerful than weapons of war, a little foolishness can destroy much good. Eli grunted. It's true. History has shown us time and time again that power can be defeated by wisdom. But often our leaders are blinded by their own perceptions, and they cannot see what is right before their eyes. People up there, he gestured toward the palace, do not listen to wise alternatives to war. And it takes only one leader to panic and mix in a bit of foolishness, and everything falls apart. Kohelet raised the scroll higher and read the next line. Just as a few dead flies give perfume a bad smell, so a little folly corrupts the greatest wisdom. Eli stroked his beard. I haven't heard that proverb before, but it fits so well. Our perfume seller works hard to create new scents to attract his customers. But his powerful aromas also bring in the flies from Esther's shop. He has complained to her about customers who leave his bottles open until the insects get in and drown. It takes only a few to ruin an entire batch of a delicate perfume. And that's the way folly works through all human endeavors. the lifelong work of the wise can be undone in a single moment by one foolish person. Quillet pointed to the scroll and read the next lines. Although the heart of the wise follows what is right, the heart of the fool always leads him astray. Even as he walks down the street, the fool shows off his ignorance. They looked at each other and said one word simultaneously, Nabal. Eli shook his head as he sat on the bed. You must have been thinking of the snake incident. Kohelet shrugged. It's pretty hard not to. I don't think anyone will forget that one. Poor Jacob. He wanted to see his son become wiser, but Nabal prefers to play the fool. Eli was about to say more, but Esther called from below. He leaned out the window. I'll be right there. He turned toward the door and his face was beaming. Kohelet raised his eyebrows. She needs some help with the booth. I need to go. He shrugged and quickly exited the room. Kohelet turned back to his desk, his thoughts returning to the incident with Nabal and the snake. You've been listening to The Scroll, Chapter 15, Part 2, and you can hear more at artofwork.ca, where we bring ancient wisdom to life. Thank you for listening.